Greetings, brethren. Happy Sabbath to everyone, and happy Sabbath to everybody who will hear this later. If I were to tell you I was going to give a message today about two brothers that were striving with each other, fighting against each other, who would you think about? Well, you might think about Cain and Abel. They're two brothers that fought against each other. You might think of Ishmael and Isaac, two brothers who fought against each other. You might think of Jacob and Esau, two brothers that fought against each other. But today, I want to talk about two other brothers that may not be the first ones to come to mind of two brothers striving against each other, but are very important. Maybe the two most important brothers in the Bible who have striven against each other in the plan of Yahweh is centered around this. And it's actually Joseph and Judah. Joseph and Judah we're going to talk about today. I want to start by going into some scriptures about Abraham, who is the forefather of Joseph and Judah, who are two sons of Israel, who was Jacob. Abraham had Isaac. Isaac had Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel. And I want to start by the covenant to Abraham to get into these two brothers and what the striving is about. Let's go to Genesis 15. Genesis 15. And we'll read a number of scriptures here about Yahweh's promise of His covenant to Abraham. Genesis 15 and verse 18 says, "And the same day Yahweh made a covenant with Abram, saying, 'Unto your seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates.'" And again, this is talking about the land covenant. There's two covenants Yahweh made with Abraham. One was about land, and one was about his descendants. This is the land covenant He made with him for the land of Israel in the Middle East. And He even gives the borders, that from the border of Egypt to the Euphrates River. And remember that, because it's going to come into play a little later from another scripture. If we go to Genesis 17, we'll read a little bit more now about this covenant as far as with who the covenant is with. Genesis 17, starting in verse 1. "When Abram was 99 years old, Yahweh appeared to Abram and said to him, 'I am the Almighty Elohim. Walk before me and be perfect, and I will make my covenant between me and you, and I will multiply you exceedingly.' And Abram fell on his face, and Elohim spoke with him, saying, 'As for me, shall be a father of many nations, and your name shall be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations, and I will make you very fruitful, greatly so, and I will give you for nations, and kings shall come out of you, and I will establish my covenant between me and you and your seed after you in their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be Elohim to you and your seed after you. And I will give to you and your seed after you the land of your sojourning, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their Elohim. And Elohim said to Abraham, 'You shall keep my covenant, you and your seed after you, in their generations.'" And if we drop down to verse 19, we'll see a little bit more. "And Elohim said, 'Your wife Sarah truly shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. And I have established my covenant with him for a perpetual ongoing covenant with his seed after him. And as to Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly. He shall father 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation. And I will establish my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this time next year." So we see that Abraham had two sons. The firstborn was Ishmael. The secondborn was Isaac. But Isaac was the son of promise. Isaac was the son that the promise was going to go through. And we have some great promises here. It will make him a great nation. Establish his covenant with him. Kings would come from his loins for an everlasting covenant. Let's go to Genesis 22. Genesis 22, verse 15. Genesis 22 and verse 15. "And the messenger," or the Malach of Yahweh, "called to Abraham out of the heavens a second time and said, 'I have sworn by myself, declares Yahweh, that on account of this thing you have done, and have not withheld your son, your only son, that blessing I will bless you, in multiplying I will multiply your seed like the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed as reward in that you have obeyed my voice. So now we see his descendants are going to be as the sand of the seashore. They're going to possess the gates of his enemies. And also, all the earth will be blessed because he obeyed his voice. All the earth would be blessed in him. And from here, we get the two promises. We get the promise of the birthright and the promise of the scepter. See, when Abraham was told that all the earth would be blessed through you, number one, we have the promise of the Messiah coming through his lines, the promise of the scepter. And we also have the promise of the birthright, the promise of the firstborn. It's very interesting, even though Ishmael was the firstborn, the right of the firstborn went to Isaac. He told him in Isaac, you know, your seed will be blessed. So we have two promises here, a birthright promise and a scepter promise. Let's just go quickly to Genesis 35. Just read two scriptures here. Genesis 35, starting in verse 10. Genesis 35, starting in verse 10. And Elohim said to him, your name is Jacob. He's talking now to Jacob, who became Isaac. Your name should not be called Jacob anymore, but Israel. His name became Israel, not Isaac. Isaac was his father. Your name is Jacob. Your name should not be called Jacob anymore, but Israel shall be your name. And he called his name Israel. And Elohim said to him, I am Elohim Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you, and kings shall go forth from your loins. So the same promise that was given to Abraham now is reaffirmed through Jacob, who's called Israel. These two promises of the birthright promise and the scepter promise. Now, which one of the children of Israel would these promises go to? Well, let's go first to Genesis 49. Go to Genesis 49, and we'll explain a little bit more what these promises are, too. What does that mean? Genesis 49 and verse 10. Genesis 49 and verse 10. It says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the lawmaker from between his feet, until Shiloh come, and the obedience of the people to him. Again, here's another prophecy of Messiah, that the scepter would not depart from Judah's feet, you know, until Shiloh, the Messiah, come. Now, what is the scepter promise? Well, I think we all know what a scepter is. It's a stick that's held by a king. We've seen kings on their throne, and they hold their scepter. So the kingship, you know, the promise of the kingship, all the earth will be blessed through you, was promised to come, that the Messiah would come through the line of Abraham. And specifically here, we see that the promise of the scepter was given to Judah. And what tribe did the Messiah, did Yeshua, come from? He came through the tribe of Judah, exactly like the scripture says. And what about the promise of the birthright? What does that mean, promise of the birthright? I think we all know that the promise of the birthright is a promise that goes, it's a promise by lineage. It goes to the firstborn, gets the promise of the firstright, of the birthright, and it's a promise of preeminence. You know, in a family, the firstborn son gets preeminence. But it's very interesting because Israel's firstborn son wasn't Joseph. Who was Israel's firstborn son? It was Reuben. But Reuben lost the birthright. And why did he? Let's go to 1 Chronicles 5. 1 Chronicles 5. Verse 1. 1 Chronicles 5 in verse 1 says, 1 Chronicles 5 verse 1, and the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, But since he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be counted according to the birthright, for Judah prevailed among his brothers, and from him was the chief ruler, but the birthright was Joseph's. So I'm not going to go into the story. You could read it in Genesis. But Reuben defiled his father's bed. What did he do? He went in to his father's concubine. Leah, who was his first wife, had a concubine, Bilhah, and Reuben went into her, you know, and had relations with her. And because of that, he lost his position for the birthright. And it's interesting, now Joseph, he wasn't the next in line, but Joseph actually was the real heir apparent to the birthright promise. And why? Because if you go again, I'm not going to read it, you could read it in Genesis yourself, but when Jacob went to Laban, who became his father-in-law, and he wanted to marry who? Rachel. He didn't want to marry Leah. And he worked 7 years. You know, he had a contract with Laban. He worked 7 years to marry Rachel. And what happened? At the end of the 7 years, Laban, you know, put into the tent Leah instead of Rachel. So Rachel was really the rightful wife of Israel or Jacob. And Rachel's firstborn son was who? Was Joseph. So since Reuben disqualified himself, the right of the firstborn went to Joseph. If we go to Genesis 48, we'll read it again over here. Genesis 48 and verse 3. Genesis 48 and verse 3, it says, "And Jacob said to Joseph, Elohim Almighty appeared to me in Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me, Behold, I will make you fruitful and will multiply you and will make you a multitude of people. And I will give this land to your seed after you as a continual possession." Again, we see the land covenant, that the land of Canaan, which became the land of Israel, was given according to the covenant. The only land that actually was part of that covenant that was over there. "And now your two sons, those born to you in the land of Egypt before my coming to you in Egypt, they are mine. Ephraim and Manasseh, like Reuben and Simeon, even they shall be mine." Now it's very interesting because here it was, Reuben lost the birthright promise and it was given to Joseph. And what did Israel do? Israel actually adopted the two sons of Joseph and said his name would be on them. Meaningly, it doesn't mean that only Ephraim and Manasseh go by the name of Israel, but it means that they became legal sons of his now. And if you look at the tribes, there were 12 tribes, but Joseph became two, because now instead of seeing the tribe of Joseph, you see the tribe of Ephraim and Manasseh. There were two of them. So 12 went to 13. And actually, when you take out Levi, because Levi didn't get an inheritance in the land, the portions, there's still 12 portions. But two portions go to Joseph. And it's very interesting that the word for Ephraim literally means double portion. But now, even with Ephraim and Manasseh, even with the two sons, who got the right of the firstborn? Because they both can't get the right of the firstborn. You know, there's only one right of the firstborn. And that right of the firstborn went to Ephraim. If we go, stay in Genesis 48, drop down to verse 14. "And Israel sent forth his right hand," and this is when he's blessing the boys, "and put it on the head of Ephraim." He was the younger one. And he was the younger. "And he put his left hand on the head of Manasseh, crossing his hands. For Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, The Elohim before whom my father Abraham and Isaac walked, the Elohim who has fed me since I was born until today, the Malach that redeemed me from every evil, may he bless the youth and may my name be called on them and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac. And may they be like the fishes increase into a multitude in the midst of the earth." So we see over here that, again, this picture of the younger surpassing the older. Now, before we go any further, I just want to make an observation. It's very interesting, and I'm not going to, I don't know exactly why this is, but if you look in the Bible, it seems in almost every circumstance, the firstborn lost out to the younger brother. And the firstborn is a very important right of the firstborn. And like I said, almost every circumstance. Look at Cain and Abel. Cain was the firstborn. And yet he lost out. You know, what did Yahweh do? He chose Abel. Ishmael and Isaac. Ishmael was the firstborn. What did Yahweh say? In Isaac, you know, thy seed will be called. Jacob and Esau. Esau was the firstborn. And what did he do? He sold his birthright. He actually sold it to Jacob. And that's why Yahweh said, Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. And here it is again with Ephraim and Manasseh. Manasseh was the firstborn, and yet what did Yahweh do? Yahweh chose Ephraim instead. And next week in the message, we're going to go a little deeper into this scripture right here and kind of go into why that happened that way. But it's just the fact that in almost every case, the firstborn was rejected. I did a tape a while back called First Fruits in the Wilderness, and was saying how we have to be very careful when you look in Hebrews, and it says how the children of Israel didn't enter the promised land. You know why? Because of lack of faith. And yet, we got to watch that we don't enter for that same lack of faith. We are called a type of first fruits, and we don't want to lose our inheritance. And it's a very scary trend throughout the Bible of the firstborn being cast away, and the younger one, the weaker vessel, being promoted up. Look at David. You know, David was the eighth son and the weakest son. And yet David got to the throne of Judah and none of his brothers did. So it's a very, very scary thing for that to happen that way. Matter of fact, it's kind of interesting when we look at this birthright and the scepter with Joseph and Judah. You know, especially now instead of Joseph, we're going to say Ephraim and Judah, because Ephraim, we just showed here, Ephraim was the one who got the birthright, not Manasseh. There's no scripture in the Bible that you'll find where Manasseh got the birthright. And from this point on in Genesis 48, we read a lot about Ephraim. We read very little, if anything, about Manasseh, except for the fact of when it's saying this one was in this land, in the land of Manasseh. But as far as the promises to Manasseh, they almost disappear after this. You know, you really don't hear them anymore. They just kind of blend in with the other tribes. But Ephraim we hear a lot about, because Ephraim was the one who got the birthright promise. And Joseph was the one who got the scepter. Now, I was just speaking a minute ago about the children of Israel in the wilderness. That whole generation of first fruits died in the wilderness. Let's go to Numbers 14, because there's only two people that entered the promised land. And like I said, nothing Yahweh does is in vain. And it's very interesting who these two people were that entered the promised land. We go to Numbers 14, verse 21. Numbers 14 and verse 21. It says, but as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of Yahweh. Sounds like a future blessing of the kingdom. For all the men who are seeing my glory and my signs, which I have done in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tried me these 10 times, and have not listened to my voice, they shall not see the land which I have sworn to their fathers. And again, that land is no other land but the land of Israel today. From the Euphrates River all the way down to Egypt is the border. It's not Europe, it's not North America, it's not South America, it's the land in the Middle East. That's the only land of promise for the millennium. Yea, not one of those scorning me shall see it. And my servant Caleb, because there is another spirit in him, and he is fully following me, I shall bring him into the land into which he has gone, and his seed shall possess it. Let's drop down to verse 27 now. Verse 27. How long shall I bear with this evil company who are murmuring against me? I have heard the murmuring of the sons of Israel, which they are murmuring against me. Say to them, as I live, says Yahweh, as surely as you have spoken in my ears, so I will do to you. Your dead body shall fall in the wilderness, even all your numbered ones, as to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, in that you have murmured against me. You shall certainly not come into the land which I lifted up my hand to cause you to live in, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Very interesting. Only Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. And if you look back at the beginning of the chapter in Numbers 14, or actually Numbers 13, when the spies were sent, what were the two tribes that they were from? If you go to Numbers 13, and you'll see in verse 6, talks about, of the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. So, Caleb was of the tribe of Judah. Drop down to verse 8, of the tribe of Joseph, Ephraim, Joshua, the son of Nun. So very, very interesting here, that the only two that were allowed to enter the promised land was the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Ephraim. The two promises, the birthright and the scepter. The birthright and the scepter. But you know, there was a lot of struggling through the years. And like I said, when you hear about brothers struggling, like I said, we hear a lot about Esau and Jacob or Ishmael and Isaac or Cain and Abel. We don't hear that much about Joseph and Judah. But there was a lot of struggling between them. But before we go further, let me just give one or two scriptures to tell you a little bit more about the birthright promise. What does that mean to have the birthright promise? Well, if we go to Deuteronomy 21, verse 15. Deuteronomy 21 and verse 15. If a man has two wives, the one loved and the other hated, and they have borne him sons, both the loved one and the hated one, and if the firstborn son was of her who was hated, then it shall be in that day that he causes his son to inherit that which he has. He may not make the son of the loved one, the firstborn, before the son of the hated one, he who is truly the firstborn. But he shall acknowledge the firstborn, the son of the hated one, by giving him a double portion of all that he has. For he is the first fruit of his strength, the right of the firstborn. So here we see, very, very important, that one of the blessings of the firstborn is to get a double portion. Do you know what Ephraim, I think I said it, Ephraim means double fruit. And we know that fruit means reward. If we're not bearing fruit, then we're not getting a reward. So it means double portion or double reward is what Ephraim means. And Ephraim is
talking as far as Yeshua goes and his right as the firstborn. Because ultimately, the scepter and the birthright are his,
and will come back to him. But Colossians 1, and starting in verse 15. Colossians 1, starting in verse 15. Says, who is the image of the invisible Elohim, the firstborn of all creation? For all things were created in him, the things in the heavens and the things on the earth, the visible and the invisible, whether thrones or lordships or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and all things consist in him. And he is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that he might be preeminent in all things. See, he has the preeminence because he is the firstborn. And that's why we're not born again yet. We're in the process of being born again. We're in the ganal. We're like children in the womb. But Yeshua is the only one who is the firstborn from the dead. So again, we know that he has the right of the scepter, of the kingship. And he also has the right, the preeminence of the firstborn. But in the flesh, Judah and Ephraim have struggled, they've strived throughout the history of Israel for these rights. Let's go to 1 Kings 2, because I want to show you, though, that the right, although the promises to Abraham were unconditional promises of eternal life, the right of the scepter and the right of the birthright are conditional. There are conditions for these. The same way the Davidic covenant. There were conditions to the Davidic covenant. But there are conditions to these. 1 Kings 2, 3 and 4. 1 Kings 2, 3 and 4. It says, and keep the charge, of Yahweh the Elohim to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, and his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn yourself. That Yahweh may continue his word which he spoke concerning me, saying, if thy children take heed to their way, to walk before me in truth with all their heart, with all their soul, there shall not fail thee, said a man, on the throne of Israel. See, the scepter promise here, it's conditional. It was conditional on obedience to Yahweh. And did that happen? So let's go to 1 Kings 6. 1 Kings 6, 12 and 13. 1 Kings 6, 12 and 13. Again, this is Yahweh talking to Solomon. It says, concerning this house which you are in building, if you will walk in my statutes and execute my judgments and keep all the commandments to walk in them, then I will perform my word with you, which I spoke unto David your father, and I will dwell among the children of Israel and not forsake my people Israel, if you obey my word, my statutes, and my commandments, which we know from history that Israel didn't. They didn't. But what about these promises? The promises, these physical promises that were promised of greatness to Abraham and his descendants, to be as the sands of the sea, to possess their gates, were these fulfilled? I know that some people today do not believe that they were fulfilled in ancient Israel, and some believe, I know from a Church of God background, that America is fulfilling these promises today. But were these promises fulfilled in ancient times? And I believe many of them were. Genesis 22:17, you don't have to go there, we were there before, talked about that the descendants of Abraham would be as the sand of the sea. Was that ever fulfilled? Let's go to 1 Kings 4. 1 Kings 4. 1 Kings 4 and verse 20. 1 Kings 4 and verse 20. It says, Judah and Israel were many, as the sand which is by the sea in multitude, eating and drinking and making merry. And Solomon reigned over all the kingdoms, from the river Euphrates to the land of the Philistines and to the border of Egypt. They brought presents and served Solomon in all the days of his life. What were the borders of the land covenant we read in Genesis 15? From the river Euphrates down to the river in Egypt. And I think, I know, like I said, if you look in Herbert Armstrong's book, United States and Britain in Prophecy, you know, that they'll take a couple of scriptures in Genesis that we read here, and they'll say the national prosperity of America is due to these promises. But I think we got to be careful sometimes that we don't take a little bit of truth and expound it into a lot of exaggeration and theory. And I think a lot of the book does that and many times. And I think a lot of the organizations from there, United, Church of God, some of the other ones are doing the same thing. Because a lot of these promises were fulfilled in the time of Solomon. And we have a tape called Parallels of Yeshua and Solomon. And we show that Solomon was a type of the kingdom of Yahweh on earth. Again, the fulfillment of the kingdom of Yahweh is when Yeshua comes back. But the promise to David and to his son was started through Solomon, but through disobedience, he never finished that problem. Finished the promises. Let's go to 1 Kings 10. 1 Kings 10, and let's see another promise here. Let's see a promise here. 1 Kings 10, about the sea gates. You'll possess the gates of your enemy. Did that ever happen before? Was that ever fulfilled? 1 Kings 10, starting in verse 22. 1 Kings 10, starting in verse 22. It says, for the king, talking about Solomon, had a navy of Tarshish at sea with the navy of Hiram. Once in 3 years, the navy of Tarshish would come bearing gold and silver and ivory and peacocks. And King Solomon was greater than any of the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom. And the earth was seeking the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom that Elohim had put into his heart. And they were each one bringing his present, vessels of silver, vessels of gold, garments of armor, spices, horses, mules, a rate year by year. And Solomon gathered chariots and horsemen. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen. And he placed them in the city of the chariots and with the king in Jerusalem. And the king made silver in Jerusalem as stones, and he made cedars as the sycamore that are in the low country for abundance. And the horses that Solomon had were brought from Egypt and from Kew. And the king's merchants received them from Coo at a price, and a chariot came up and went out of Egypt, 600 shekels of silver and a horse for 150. And so for all the kings of the Hittites and for the kings of Assyria, they brought them out by their means. And we see that just the abundance that Solomon had here was unbelievable. Let's go back to 1 Kings 4. 1 Kings 4, again. Just the amount that what he amassed, you know, the blessings of richness were just unbelievable. 1 Kings 4 and 21. 1 Kings 4 and 21, we were just there before. And Solomon reigned over all the kingdoms from the river to the land of the Philistines to the border of Egypt. We read that, verse 22. And Solomon's food for one day was 30 measures of fine flour, 60 measures of meal, 10 fat oxen, 20 oxen of the pasture, 100 sheep, beside deer and gazelles and roebuck and fatted fowl. For he had the rule over all on the side of the river, from Tiphah even to Azah, over all the kings on the side of the river, and he had peace on all sides from around him. And Judah and Israel lived securely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. So we see all their borders were secure. And he had a gigantic navy. He had gigantic, big ships. If you look up those words for vessels that it talks about, you know, they had unbelievable, the ships of Tarshish, what he talks about. They were gigantic ships, big ships that he had. And they possessed all the gates of their enemy. All the lands around, they possessed the gates of their enemy. And they were safe. So these promises were fulfilled in type, in a physical way to Solomon, thousands of years ago. But there's a greater promise. And this is what I want to show. I want to show that this birthright and this scepter, there are far greater spiritual promises that are coming from this than what may have been known before and that the Bible tells us about. Far, far greater promises. But something happened here to Solomon. We know that it was told if he was faithful, his kingdom would have went on forever and ever. Yahweh would have blessed them. And the whole point of this was, the birthright and the scepter, was to show, to take one nation on the earth and show if they're obedient to him, that they would get these blessings. But what happened? 1 Kings 11, starting in verse 9. 1 Kings 11, starting in verse 9. And Yahweh was angry with Solomon, for his heart had bent away from Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, who had appeared to him twice, and had given a charge to him concerning this thing, not to go after other gods. And he did not keep that which Yahweh commanded. And Yahweh said to Solomon, because this has been done to you, and you have not kept my covenant, my statutes that I have charged you, I shall surely tear the kingdom from you and shall give it to your servant. Only I will not do it in your days for the sake of your father David. I shall tear it out of the hand of your son. Only I will not tear away all the kingdom. I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem that I have chosen. So we see here, because of sin now, the kingdom was going to be divided and torn out of his hand. And guess who the kingdom was given to? Take a guess who the kingdom was given to. The birthright holder, right? 1 Kings 11, let's go to verse 26. Verse 26 of 1 Kings 11. And Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephraimite of Zereda, a servant of Solomon, and his mother's name was Zerulah, a widow woman, who had lifted up a hand against the king, and this was the thing in which he lifted up his hand against the king. Solomon built Milo, repairing the breaks of the city, and I think I'll just drop down here to verse 32. And he shall have one tribe for my servant David's sake. Or actually, let's go down to verse 29. And at that time it happened that Jeroboam had gone out from Jerusalem, and Ahijah the Sholonite, the prophet, found him in the way, and he covered him with a new garment, and both of them were by themselves in a field. And Ahijah had hold on the new garment on him and tore it into 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, take 10 pieces for yourself, for so says Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, behold, I am tearing the kingdom from the hand of Solomon and giving it to the 10 tribes. And he shall have one tribe for my servant David's sake and for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, because they have forsaken me and bowed themselves to Ashtari, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of Moab, Milcom, the god of the sons of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do what is right in my eyes, and my statutes and my judgments, and as his father David did. But I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him ruler all the days of his life, for my servant David's sake, whom I chose, because he kept my commands and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand, and I will give it to you, 10 tribes. And I will give 1 tribe to his son, that there may be a lamp to my servant David before me all the days in Jerusalem, the city that I have chosen to myself to put my name there. And I will take you, and you shall reign according to all that your soul desires, and shall be king over Israel. And it shall be, if you shall hear all that I command you, and shall walk in my ways, and do what is right in my eyes, to keep my statutes and commands, as David did, then I shall be with you, and shall build a sure house for you, as I built for David, and shall give Israel to you. So very interesting now, what happens? The kingdom is torn away from Solomon for sin, and it's given again to Ephraim. Ephraim gets it through Jeroboam. The right of the firstborn comes again. But he tells them, again, it's conditional. Only if you're obedient. And we don't have to go too far to know that none of the kings, including Jeroboam, was obedient. None of them were. King after king after king were disobedient. So Yahweh finally ripped the kingdom out of the hand of Ephraim for good. And sent them into captivity. We know the Assyrians took them in 721 BC into captivity. And we've never heard from the tribes of Israel again. Well, let's go to the book of Hosea and let's read a little bit about this in Hosea. I know this may be a little mundane now going over some of these historical facts, but it's very important to lay a groundwork because what is happening today has everything to do with these promises of Abraham that we were talking about and what's happened to the birthright and the scepter from that time. Hosea 1, 4 through 6. And Yahweh said to him, and this is again, he told Hosea to take a harlot, which was a type of Israel, and he had children, and these are the names of the children by the harlot. And Yahweh said to him, call his name God will sow, for yet in a little while I will visit the blood of Jezreel on the house of Jehu, and will cause the kingdom of the house of Israel to stop. And it shall be in that day I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. And he conceived again and bore a daughter. And he said to him, call her name No Mercy, for I will not again still have mercy on the house of Israel, but I will completely take them away. Drop down to verse 9. Then he said, call his name Not My People, for you are not my people, and I will not be for you. So very interesting. This is the message to Israel. Yahweh is going to cut them off. He's not going to have mercy, and they're not going to be his people anymore. Exactly what happened when the Assyrians took over in 721 BC. Let's go to Hosea 5. We'll start in verse 3. Hosea 5, starting in verse 3, and we'll read a little more about Ephraim and what happened to Ephraim. It says, I know Ephraim, and Israel has not hidden from me. For now, O Ephraim, you have fornicated. Israel is defiled. Their doings will not allow them to turn to their Elohim. For the spirit of fornication is in their midst, and they do not know Yahweh. And the pride of Israel answers to his face. So Israel and Ephraim shall stumble in their iniquity. Judah shall also stumble with them. They shall go with their flocks and with their herds to seek Yahweh, but they shall not find. He has withdrawn himself from them. They have acted treacherously against Yahweh, for they have brought forth strange sons. Now a new moon shall devour them with their portions. Blow a horn in Gibeah, a trumpet in Ramah. Cry aloud, Beth Aven. After you, O Benjamin, Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of correction among the tribes of Israel. I have made known that which is confirmed. The rulers of Judah were as removers of a border. I will pour out my wrath on them like water. Ephraim is oppressed, crushed in judgment, because he was pleased. He walked after the command. Go down to verse 15. I will go, I will return to my place until they confess their guilt and seek my face. In their affliction, they will seek me diligently. So we see there is a mighty judgment coming on Israel in that day. On Israel and especially Ephraim. Because remember, the right of the firstborn, although Ephraim was the leader of Israel. You know, it wasn't just Ephraim, but Ephraim was the firstborn. Ephraim had the right of the firstborn and Ephraim was the leader. And that's why Ephraim got the kingdom of the 10 tribes. So it was all Israel, but primarily Ephraim. The same way Judah was with Benjamin and Levi. But what do you hear? The promise of the scepter was to Judah, even though Levi and Benjamin were part of that. And actually Saul, the first king, was a Benjaminite. But it was pulled out from him, and it was given to Judah, just like the prophecy said. Let's go to Hosea 3. Back to Hosea 3 in verse 4 and 5 and see what else would happen to Ephraim. And Israel. Hosea 3 and verse 4. For the sons of Israel shall stay many days with no king, and no ruler, and no sacrifice, and no pillars, and no ephod or teraphim, a household God that they had. Afterward, the sons of Israel shall return and seek Yahweh their Elohim and David their king. And they shall fear Yahweh and His goodness in the end of days. In the end of days. So we see this trend that there's nothing promised of Ephraim and Israel becoming this great nation again until the Messiah comes. Which promised of them is that they would be desolate. Absolutely desolate. Let's go to Hosea 9. Hosea 9 and start in verse 11. Hosea 9 and verse 11. It says, Ephraim is like a bird. Their glory shall fly away from birth and from the womb and from conception. Though they nourish their sons, yet I will make them childless without a man. Yea, woe also to them when I turn away from them. And when I look toward Tyre, Ephraim was planted in a pleasant place. But Ephraim shall bring forth his sons to the slayer. O Yahweh, give them what you will give them. Give them a miscarrying womb and dry breasts. All their wickedness is in Gilgal. For there I hated them. I will drive them out of my house for the wickedness of their doings. I will love them again. All their rulers are revolters. Ephraim is stricken. Their root is dried up. They shall bear no fruit. Yea, though they bear, yet I will yet put to death the beloved ones of their womb. My Elohim shall reject them because they did not listen to him. And they shall be wanderers among the nations. Wanderers among the nations. So here it is. There's no promise here that Ephraim, before the Messiah comes, would be this great nation again with all these blessings. That already happened. That already happened in the days of Solomon. All the promises, physical blessings to Abraham of him and his descendants were fulfilled in the reign of Solomon. Solomon was the richest person that ever lived. Had the richest kingdom. Everyone was under their vine tree. There was total peace. They had the borders and the gates of their neighbors. But because of disobedience, Ephraim was told that they were going to go and they were going to be wanderers among the nation. Wanderers among the nation. And what is prophesied here is that Ephraim, this is the diaspora that was prophesied. That Ephraim and Israel, they were going to go and be dispersed in all the nations. And what happened from there? When Assyria took Israel captive, 721 BC, you never hear about them again. And we'll talk about it a little later, where they went to. We know they went to Europe. We know that many Americans are Israelites. But we know they also went to many other places. To India, to Romania, to all over the world. See, because the whole point of the gospel being spread to the world was by this curse. Yahweh took this curse and turned it into a blessing. He took the curse of their being cast away and he turned it into a blessing. Go back to Hosea 1 and let's read about it. Let's read about it. Because he didn't cast them away forever, but he did cast them away for a time. Hosea 1 and verse 10. Hosea 1 and verse 10 says, Yet the number of the sons of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which is not measured or numbered. And it shall be in the place where it is said to them, You are not my people. It shall be said to them, Sons of the living Elohim. And the sons of Judah and the sons of Israel shall be gathered together and shall set over themselves one head, Yeshua. And they shall go out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. See, there is a promise of the gathering back. But in the meantime, and we're going to read why, we're going to start getting into in the second part of this sermon, why they the diaspora, why they were cast to these nations. But I do want to go to Deuteronomy 28, and I do want to make one point before we go on. Because I know from Church of God, this theory of America, the land of America, not the people of America, some of them, but the land of America being the land of Israel. I know also in Assemblies of Yahweh and some of these sacred name groups, they feel the same thing, that the land of America is the land of Israel. And this scripture I'm going to show you in Deuteronomy 28 proves without a shadow of a doubt that America is not the land of Israel. Number one, we never see anywhere in the Bible but that Israel or the land covenant is anywhere but in Israel. We have a tape called Where is the Promised Land? If you never got it, please ask for it. But the theory goes like this, that they were put in captivity for a time, but once that time was fulfilled, then all these great promises came to America. And the reality of it is that America, like any other world empire, was prosperous. The Roman Empire was extremely rich. The Greek Empire went all the way past Afghanistan and India. They're finding today, we just saw in the news the other day, relics in Afghanistan from the Greek Empire. So all empires went across the earth. That's not a new thing. But this scripture in Deuteronomy 28 will prove that America could not be the fulfillment of Israel. And just listen to it. Deuteronomy 28, starting in verse 1. And if you shall listen carefully to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim, taking heed to do all his commandments, which I command you this day, Yahweh your Elohim shall set you on high above all the nations of the earth. And all these blessings shall come on you and overtake you if you will listen to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim. Now, let me ask you one question. In the history of America, has America ever, as a nation, the land of America, have they ever had a law for keeping the Sabbath? Have they ever done this as a law to the land? Have they ever kept the holy days? Have they ever kept his statutes and his judgments? Has America ever kept the land Sabbaths as a law? Have they ever kept the Jubilees? Have they ever called on Yahweh's name like it says, if they call on his name? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So Yahweh says, if you do these things, I will give you all these blessings. And to say that Yahweh gave them all these blessings when they didn't do these things, then either he's a liar or America is not Israel. I mean, it's got to be one or the other. Let's go on here. And all these blessings shall come on you and overtake you if you will listen to the voice of Yahweh. Verse 3, you will be blessed in the city, you will be blessed in the field. The fruit of your body shall be blessed, the fruit of your ground, the fruit of your livestock, on and on and on. Verse 7, Yahweh shall cause your enemies that rise up against you to be stricken before your face. They shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. Yahweh shall command the blessing on you in your storehouses and all that you set your hand to do. And he shall bless you in the land which Yahweh your God is giving to you. Yahweh shall establish you a holy people to himself, as he has sworn to you, if, now here's the if, he'll do this if, and it's a big if you shall keep the commands of Yahweh your Elohim and welcome his ways, and all the people shall see that you are called by the name of Yahweh. Has America ever used his name? Maybe congregations, but not as a nation. And Yahweh shall prosper you in your goods and whatnot. But I'm going to stop there for now because this proves without a shadow of a doubt that America as a nation never did these things. They never called on the name of Yahweh as a nation. They never obeyed his statutes and his judgments and his laws. They never kept the Sabbath as a nation from their inception. They never ever did any of these things. So they cannot be the fulfillment of Israel. Where, like I said, all those promises given back there to Abraham were fulfilled. The kingdom of Solomon did fulfill. They did fulfill all the promises to Abraham, as we read. But America never did what was required. They never did what was required, which Solomon did at the beginning. In the beginning of Solomon's reign, they obeyed all the commands. It wasn't until later on that he disobeyed, and what happened? We see what happened real quick. How could America, who's been a nation now, for over 225 years, they have never ever did these things. So why would he bless them as Israel if they never did the things that were required to be blessed? You've got to ask yourself that question. If you believe America is Israel, be honest with yourself. Read Deuteronomy 28 and ask yourself, why would Yahweh bless them when they never did what was required to get the blessing? Well, the next question may be, then why were they blessed? I mean, you got to say, for many years, America was blessed. They are the strongest nation on the face of the earth. They are the hammer of all the earth. You know, they are the world policemen. Well, the reason why they were blessed is, for many, many years, America blessed Israel. America blessed Israel for many, many years. If we go to Genesis 12, verse 1. Genesis 12 verse 1 says, And Yahweh had said to Abram, Go out from your land and from your kindred and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you and curse the one despising you. And in you all families of the earth shall be blessed. It's twofold. Number one is through the Messiah coming through his line, but it's also the diaspora that Israel would be scattered all over the earth. And then the calling of the saints is to call them back from the diaspora, and all the earth would be blessed, and we'll get into that shortly. But the reason why America was blessed so much is America blessed Israel. America has given out more Bibles around the world than any country in the history of the human race. America has sent more missionaries around the world than anywhere. America allowed all the Jews into America, into New York, that there's more Jews living in America than even in the land of Israel. And they allowed them freedom of religion. And they allowed the Christians freedom of religion and supported them. And that's why America was blessed for all these years. But things have changed. Things have changed very, very quickly. Things have changed. To now, America is behind this one world government. And then the United Nations now, if you preach the name of Yeshua for salvation only, it is a hate crime in the world court. And America is pushing that. America also has befriended the nation of Israel. And now they're ready to take their hand away. And they're supporting a Palestinian state. And you watch. You watch, like it says in Jeremiah 51:50, 49 or 50, that when America takes their hand away from Israel, that is going to be their last, the last nail in the coffin. And what happened in New York is, it is a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call for that country to repent of sin, and it's a wake-up call for the Israelites, the seed of Ephraim, maybe Manasseh, and other tribes in Israel, in America, to wake up. Because there are many Israelites living in the land of America, but the land of America is not the land of Israel. And Deuteronomy 28 proves that without a shadow of a doubt. Because the land of America never did the things to get those blessings. Never did. But it's interesting. He says, all the nations of the earth will be blessed through you. Now let's go to John 10, because I want to start getting into this now, what that means. And why? Why was the diaspora? Why did Yahweh allow Ephraim to be the wanderer of the nation? See, he didn't say that Ephraim was going to be this great nation in the end time. He never said that. What he said was Ephraim would be a wanderer around all the nations, and then the Messiah would call him back. John 10. Now we could start tying these pieces together. It's going to get very interesting here. John 10, verse 14. Yeshua said, I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. The birthright and the scepter. Ephraim and Judah coming together as one in that day. See, he has other sheep in another fold. Ephraim, the scattered, the diaspora, the ones that went out through all the nations. And he's got to go looking for them. Go to John 11, over one page in verse 49. John 11 and verse 49. This is talking about when the Sanhedrin got together and they were saying they had to do something about Yeshua or their whole nation was going to fall. And the Romans were going to come in and take away their spot. And listen what Caiaphas said. And one of them named Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, and said to them, you know nothing at all, nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people and not the whole nation perish. And this he spoke not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Yeshua should die for that nation. And not for that nation only, but that also he should gather together in one the children of Elohim that were scattered abroad. See, who did Yeshua come to? He came to the Jews who were his own, but the Jews rejected him. So now what does he do? He didn't only come for those sheep, he has other sheep also. Go back to John 1. I just want to go to that one scripture about the rejection of the Jews and set that down. Because, see, this fight for the birthright and the scepter has been going on for thousands of years. And remember, Solomon grabbed it, and then Solomon lost it, and Ephraim grabbed it, and then Ephraim lost it, and Judah grabbed it, and it's been going back and forth and back and forth. And there's been friction. A lot of this in a lot of church circles, because they don't believe in the two-house theory, which I do fully believe in. They don't preach a lot of this, but there's been friction between Ephraim and Judah for many, many years. Look at John 1 and verse 11. said, He, Yeshua, came unto His own, and His own received Him not. His own received Him not. See, the Messiah came. What profit has the Jew? By all means, the oracles of Yahweh were given unto them. See, they were the ones that were given salvation first. They were given salvation first, and then what happened? They rejected salvation, and where did Yeshua go to? Did He go to Gentile nations? Absolutely not. You know, the word goy, where the word Gentile comes from, only means nation. If you look at the real, it means nation. It doesn't mean Gentile. It doesn't, you know, there's another word for Gentile when they, Hellen, you know, which is a Gentile. But all that word goy means is nation or multitude of people. So Yeshua came to the Jews because at that point they had the scepter and the birthright. When Ephraim went into captivity by the Assyrians in 721, like we read in Hosea, but what happened? The Jews rejected Him. So now who is He going back to? He has other sheep of another fold. Look at Matthew 10. Go to Matthew the 10th chapter. What did Yeshua tell His disciples? What did He tell His disciples? Matthew 10, verse 5. Matthew 10 and verse 5. These 12 Yeshua sent forth and commanded them, saying, Go not in the way of the nations, and not into any city of the Samaritans, enter you not, or not into the way of the Gentiles, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now, does that mean that only Israelites are allowed to become believers? Say, absolutely not. Absolutely not. By Yeshua sending out the diaspora, by Israel being scattered throughout the earth, anybody from any race, man or woman or black or white, or it doesn't matter, Gentile or Jew, it doesn't matter what you are, anyone can come to salvation. But the plan that He is working is still to seek out the lost sheep of the house of Israel. There's still one tree, and that tree is Israel. And that's who He's seeking out. If you go to 1 Peter 1, 1 Peter 1. In verse 1. It says, Peter, an apostle of Yeshua Messiah, to the elect sojourners of the dispersion of Pontus, of Galatia, of Cappadocia, of Asia, of Bithynia, according to the foreknowledge of Elohim the Father, or Yahweh the Father, in sanctification of the Spirit, to obedience and sprinkling of the blood of Yeshua Messiah. Grace and peace be to you. See, the Father foreknew this. The Father foreknew about the dispersion of Israel. And look where it is. It's not just United States and Britain, by far. It's all over the place. Although, I'll be the first one to admit, there is a large concentration of Israelites in the land of America. And I don't want to belittle that fact at all. Maybe more than anywhere on the earth. There's probably more Israelites living in America than any country on the earth, and that's probably another reason for their blessings. But the land of America, it does not make it the land of Israel at all. But look what he says. To all these places where they were scattered, Peter is writing to these people. James 1:1, I'm not going to go there, but James 1:1 says to the 12 tribes scattered abroad. 12 tribes scattered abroad. Well, let's go to Romans 11. Let's try to tie all this in together. Because what on earth is Yahweh doing? Well, it's pretty simple what He's doing. He gave these promises to Abraham, the promises of the birthright and the scepter. Seemed each person that it was given to kept giving it away. Esau sold it for a bowl of porridge. You know, Joseph wound up getting it because of Reuben's sin. Ephraim got it over Manasseh. Manasseh sinned and he lost it. It went, Judah wound up with the birthright and the scepter. But now what happens? Now it's going back again. Back again to its rightful owner, to Ephraim, and to the house of Israel. Romans 11, 1 and 2. Romans 11, 1 and 2. It says, I say then, did not Elohim thrust away His people? Let it not be. For I am also an Israelite out of Abraham's seed, of the tribe of Benjamin. Yahweh did not thrust away His people whom He foreknew. Okay, let's drop down now to verse 11. I say then, did not they stumble that they should fall? Let it not be. But by their slipping away came salvation to the nations to provoke them to jealousy. Very important, like I said. See, the main goal is the searching out of the lost tribes of Israel, primarily the birthright holder of Ephraim. But by that happening, by their falling away, salvation was opened to anyone. Because while you're going out to America and England and France and Denmark and India and you're seeking out these lost tribes, anyone else that wants to come in is open to salvation. It's not a closed door anymore. It's not just to the Jew. It's not just to the Israelite. But they are the ones that we're seeking out. They're the ones that we're sent to. And in the meantime, anyone else that wants to join into the one tree of Israel can. But if they're slipping away as the riches of the world, and their default, the riches of the nations, how much more their fullness? For I speak to you, the nations, since I am an apostle of the nations. I glorify my ministry if somehow I may provoke to jealousy my flesh and may save some of them. For if they're casting away is the reconciliation of the world, what is their reception except life from the dead? And stop right there. Very, very important. If their casting away is the reconciliation of the world. Remember what we just said? The diaspora? By them being cast away into captivity in 721 by Assyria into all the nations, all the way from India and China that way, all the way to the west to America and Great Britain. If their casting away was salvation now all over the world, because now we got to go into every nation on earth to get all these brothers out of there, that means everyone can get salvation. What is their gathering together in this end time? Their gathering together is life from the dead. What does that tell you? It tells you that we are the last generation. By the gathering of them back, it tells you that Yeshua is coming back and the resurrection is going to be here. Drop down to verse 22. Behold then the kindness and the severity of Yahweh on those having fallen for severity, but on you kindness if you continue in the kindness. Otherwise you will be also be cut off. And those also, if they do not continue in unbelief, they will be grafted in. For Yahweh is able to graft them in again. For if you were cut out of the natural wild olive tree and were against nature grafted into a good olive tree, how much more these, being according to nature, will be grafted into their own olive tree. See, there's one tree of Israel. And like I said, the goal here is to go out from Yeshua's own mouth and find these lost tribes. Find our brothers and bring them back into the bond of the covenant. In the meantime, anybody else in the world, no matter what color they are, no matter what sex they are, no matter what country they're from, they're all welcome to come to salvation and become part of the one tree of Israel. But the Israelites who were cast out, Ephraim, it said, who are wanderers throughout the whole earth, they can definitely be cast, grafted back into their own tree. For, and I'm in verse 25 now. For I do not want you to be ignorant of this mystery, brothers. And this is very, very interesting here. So that you may not be wise within yourself, that hardness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the nations come in. And so all Israel will be saved, as it has been written, the deliverer will come out of Zion, and he will turn away ungodliness from Jacob. And this is my covenant with them when I take away their sins. And when is it going to happen? Until the fullness of the nations comes in. What does that mean, the fullness of the nations? Let's go back to Genesis 48. Genesis 48. Because the promise that was given to Ephraim and Manasseh has to deal with this. Particularly Ephraim, who was given the firstborn promise. Because there's a mistranslation in the King James Bible, in verse 19, which I'll read it when we get up to there, but starting in verse 16, verse 16, I'm reading out of the interlinear, says, The messenger that redeemed me from every evil, may he bless the youth, Ephraim and Manasseh, and may my name be called on them in the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and may they, like the fishes, increase into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Very interesting. Now, it wasn't told that they were going to become this one nation in the end that was going to be this great nation called America. It says that they were going to become a multitude of people in the midst of the earth. We read already in Hosea 9:17 that Ephraim was going to be wanderers scattered throughout the earth. So they are going to be wanderers, but many of them, all over the earth. And I wouldn't doubt it if half the earth today are descendants of Abraham. Maybe more, maybe three quarters of the earth. But most people probably living on this earth one way or another are a descendant of Abraham. And Joseph saw, verse 17, that his father was putting his right hand on the head of Ephraim. And it was evil in his eyes. Remember, Ephraim was the younger one. And he took hold of his father's hand to turn it from Ephraim's head to the head of Manasseh. And Joseph said to his father, "No, so my father, for this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head." And his father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He also shall be a people, and he shall become great," talking about Manasseh, "but his younger brother shall become greater than he, and his seed shall become the fullness of the nations." Now, in the King James, they put a multitude of nations. And I know that in Herbert Armstrong's book, he talks about this being Great Britain, because Great Britain is a nation in a multitude of nations. But that is not what the original says. Get an interlinear Bible and look in Genesis 48, in verse 19, and it literally says that he, Ephraim, see, this was coming from Yahweh. He wasn't just haphazardly changing his hands. He was taking Ephraim as the younger one because it was Yahweh's will. He knew of the diaspora that was going to come. He knew that Ephraim was going to be scattered all throughout the earth, and he knew that Ephraim's seed would be the fullness of the nations. And what do we just read in Romans? That the time would come, the blindness in part, until the fullness of the nations comes in. And everyone always thought that meant Gentiles. Doesn't mean Gentiles. Ephraim is the fullness of the nations. See, when Judah turned away from Yeshua, and Judah turned away from the Messiah, Yahweh never became a Gentile God. He never became the God of the Sidonians, or the God of the Hittites, or the God of the Amorites. What he did was, he, just like he did for 3,500 years he's been doing, he went back to the other side. He went back to the birthright promise. He went back to Ephraim. And just like we read in Hosea 1 and verse 10 and 11, "In that day I will call those people who were not my people the sons of the living El." It's not another people. It's the same people in Hosea in the beginning that he said, "You are not my people." Why did he say that? Because they were going to be dispersed. They were going to go into slavery. They were going to go into captivity. And they did. But because of his mercy and because of his promise of the birthright promise to Abraham, he said that in the end, Ephraim would be the fullness of the nations. And that is so awesome to think about. That now what is being worked out is the two-house theory. The calling back of Ephraim and Judah into one. Let's go to Ezekiel 37. Ezekiel 37. Let's read about this. I mean, am I just a madman? Or is this biblical? Is Ephraim and Judah going to be one again in the land? And is the strife that is between them going to be taken away? In both cases, it's a yes. Ezekiel 37, starting in verse 15. Ezekiel 37, starting in verse 15. "And the word of Yahweh was to me, saying, 'And you, son of man, take one stick and write on it for Judah and for his companions, the sons of Israel.'" See, because remember now, both of these people, they represent the birthright and the scepter. But there's people from the other tribes that are also part of them. Benjamin was part of Judah. There was all mixtures that came back after the captivity in Babylon. But primarily, it was still Judah. It was still Judah that was in the land there, just like primarily it's Ephraim who's being worked with in the end time. So he says, "Take two sticks, one write for Judah and his companions, the sons of Israel. Then take another stick and write on it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and all the house of Israel." Remember here, now again, it says nothing about Manasseh, because the right of the firstborn was given to Ephraim. for Joseph the stick of Ephraim and the house of Israel his companions, and draw them to one stick for yourself, and draw them one to one for yourself into one stick. And they shall become for oneness in your hand. And when the sons of your people shall speak to you, saying, will you not declare what these things mean? Say to them, so says the Almighty Yahweh, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his companions, and I will put them with him with the stick of Judah, and will make them one stick, and they shall be one in my hand. And the stick shall be in your hand, the ones in which you write before their eyes. And say to them, so says Yahweh Almighty, behold, I will take the sons of Israel from among the nations where they have gone, and I will gather them from all around, not just America and Britain, from everywhere, from all around, and will bring them into their own land. Remember, the land covenant is only in that one land in Israel, from the river Euphrates down to the borders of Egypt. It's the land of Israel. And I will make them one nation in the land of Israel, on the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be a king to them all, Yeshua. And they shall not be two nations still, and they will not be split into two kingdoms anymore. And they will not still be defiled with their idols, even their filthy idols, not with all their transgressions, but I will save them out of their dwelling places in them where they have sinned, and I will cleanse them. And they shall be to me for a people, and I will be for them for Elohim. And my servant David shall be king over them, and there shall be one shepherd to them all, Yeshua. And they shall walk in my judgments and keep my statutes and do them. And they shall dwell in the land that I have given to my servant, to Jacob, there where your fathers dwelt in it. And they shall dwell on it, they and their sons and the sons of their sons forever. And my servant David shall be ruler to them forever. And I will cut a covenant of peace with them. It shall be an everlasting covenant with them, and I will place them and multiply them, and I will give my sanctuary in their midst forever. And my tabernacle shall be with them, and I will be their Elohim, and they will be a people to me. And the nations shall know that I, Yahweh, sanctify Israel when my sanctuary will be in their midst forever. How awesome is this? How awesome is this? This friction we've been reading about, this fight going on ever since the days of Genesis, all of a sudden will all be gone. All be gone. Go to Isaiah 11. We'll read a scripture in Isaiah about this day. When, again, the pulling together of Judah and Israel, the two-house theory, which for the first time in the history of the land of Israel, some are starting to accept this two-house theory. Before, they always said, oh, no, there's not two houses. It's only the house of Judah. And after the dispersion into Babylon, they all came back here, which is not true. Some came back, but the majority did not. There is a two-house theory, and now it's being worked with Ephraim. Isaiah 11, verse 11. Isaiah 11, 11. Again, this is all millennium. You could read it. Verse 7, the cow and the bear shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. All millennium stuff. Drop down to verse 11.
And it shall be in that day that Yahweh shall again set his hand the second time to recover the remnant of his people that remain from Assyria, from Egypt, from Patros, from Ethiopia, from Persia, from Shinar,
from the four winds of the earth. Listen to verse 13 now. And the envy of Ephraim shall turn off, and Judah's foes shall be cut off. Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and Judah shall not trouble Ephraim. See, in that day, this striving that's been happening between the two brothers, the fighting for the birthright and the scepter, going all the way back to Solomon, and then Jeroboam and Rehoboam, all this fighting will be gone. And you know why? Because when Yeshua returns, Yeshua gets both the birthright and the scepter. These tribes were only holding it for him anyway. But Yeshua will get the birthright and the scepter. Let's go to Zechariah 6. And once he's here, all the enmity, all the strife will be over with all of it. Zechariah, the 6th chapter. In verse 12. Zechariah 6 and verse 12. It says, speak to him saying, so says Yahweh of hosts, saying, behold, the man whose name is the branch, remember Isaiah 11, who shall stem out of the root of Jesse, the branch, Yeshua, and he shall spring up of his place, and he shall build the temple of Yahweh. Who's going to build the temple? Yeshua's going to build the temple. And he shall bear the majesty, and he shall sit and rule on his
throne. Who will have the scepter in that day? Yeshua. And he shall be a priest on his throne, and the council of peace shall be between the two of them. Not only is he going to bring priest and king together, but he's going to bring the birthright and the scepter. Remember what we read in Colossians? Who is the firstborn? Who has the right of the firstborn? Yeshua. Yeshua is ultimate firstborn of all of them. And Ephraim disqualified himself. That's why Ephraim went into captivity. And although Ephraim is being called back again for salvation, which is wonderful, he's not being called back to get the birthright promise. Because that promise is gone now. And the scepter promise to Yeshua. He will be king and priest and have the scepter and the birthright in that day. And that's why there'll be no friction anymore. Ephraim won't have to vex Judah, and Judah won't have to vex Ephraim. Now, let's go to Genesis 48. I want to show you another blessing that was given to Ephraim that is kind of overlooked. And this is why, in the end time now, is Yahweh today working with Judah? Is Yahweh working with Judah? No, he's not. I'm going to show you some scriptures that prove that. But he is working with Ephraim. He is working with the sons of Israel. But Judah will be the last to come back in now because they rejected him while he was here. Genesis 48 and verse 20. Genesis 48 and verse 20. And he blessed them in that day, saying, You shall Israel bless, saying, May Elohim make you like Ephraim and like Manasseh. And Israel said to Joseph, See, I am dying, and Elohim will be with you and will return you to the land of your fathers. And I will give to you one spur of land beyond your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. What is this special blessing? This one spur of land, this one extra blessing that he said to Joseph, he'll give to him. Let's go to John, the fourth chapter. Go to the book of John, fourth chapter, John 4 and verse 5. It said, Then cometh he, talking about Yeshua, to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Just what we read about. Now, what's so important about this? Very interesting. We know that right over here is when he talks to the woman near the well. And he's talking how he is the water of life. And if she would accept that, he would give her water where she'd never have to drink again. Right there near that parcel, this special blessing that was given to him. Drop down to verse 31 now. And let's read and see if there's anything here. A message to Ephraim, to the sons of Israel. Then after the woman left, we know the disciples came back in verse 31. But in the meantime, the disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, eat. But he said to them, I have food to eat which you do not know. Then the disciples said to one another, No one brought him food to eat. Yeshua said to him, My food is that I should do the will of him who sent me, and that I may finish his work. Do not say it is yet 4 months, and the harvest comes. Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes, and behold the fields, for they are already white to harvest. And the one reaping receives reward, and gathers fruit to everlasting life, so that both the one sowing and the one reaping may rejoice together. For in this the word is true, that another is the one sowing, and another will the one reaping. I sent you to reap what you have not labored over. Others have labored, and you have entered into their labor. Now this is very interesting. I believe this is an encoded message to the sons of Israel in the end time. Because he says, some have sown, and others will reap. He says, and you're going to come and reap what you haven't sown. Now who were the ones who sown? Who sown the seeds of the early congregation? It was the tribe of Judah. It was Judah. There were no Israelites at that point. For the first 10 years of the church, even the apostles who were told to go to the lost sheep of the tribes of Israel, they never left Jerusalem for the first 8 or 10 years. So the seeds were all sown through Judah. But who will do the reaping in the end time? It's not going to be Judah. In the end time, the reaping is going to be done by Israel. By Ephraim. See, the promise now is through Ephraim. I would stake out of true believers, and I don't know the number of true believers out there, but I would stake myself to say, easily more than half of true believers, probably close to 2/3 or more, maybe 3/4, are Israelites, and not from the tribe of Judah. Ephraimites and in other tribes of Israel. Let's go to Luke 13. And I'll prove to you now, in Luke 13, exactly what he's saying here, that Judah was the one who sown, and Israel is the one who's going to reap. Judah sown, Ephraim will reap the birthright and the scepter. Luke 13 and verse 24. Luke 13 and verse 24. Labor to enter in through the narrow gate, for I say to you that many will seek to enter and will not have strength. From the time the master of the house rises up and he shuts the door, and you begin to stand outside and knock at the door, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. And answering, he will say to you, I do not know you. From where are you? Then you will begin to say, we ate and drank before you, and you taught in our streets. And he will say, I tell you, I do not know you. From where are you? Stand back from me, all workers of unrighteousness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth when you see Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the prophets in the kingdom of Yahweh, but you yourself thrust outside. And they will come from the east and the west and from the north and the south and will recline in the kingdom of Yahweh. And behold, there are last ones who will be first, and there are first ones who will be last. Who is he talking about? He's talking about Ephraim and Judah. Judah will be cast out because they rejected him, and Ephraim will be gathered in. The first will be last, and the last will be first. Judah is the one who sown the seeds 2,000 years ago. Ephraim is the one who's reaping now. Drop down to verse 34. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, Judah, Judah, the ones killing the prophets and stoning the ones that have been sent to her. How often I desire to gather your children in a way a hen gathers her brood under the wings, and you did not desire it. Behold, your house is left to you desolate. And truly I say to you, you shall not at all see me until the time that you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of Yahweh. Doesn't mean no Jew can be saved. We know many of them. The point is, though, that Judah is not the chief tribe at this time now. That now Ephraim is being the chance, because Ephraim is scattered all throughout the world. And Judah is such a little tribe anyway. How many Jews that are believers? But I'm telling you, out of the thousands or hundreds of thousands of true believers out there, the majority of them are Israelites and Ephraimites, I would believe. But it's very interesting. It's very, very interesting that he says the last will be first and the first will be last. Because Ephraim and Israel will be the ones that get to enter first. They're the ones that are going to be first fruits. See, they have the birthright promise. And they are going to be the first fruits in this time. Judah may have to wait, because if they don't see him again until they say, blessed is he who comes in the name of Yahweh, the kingdom's already here by that point. And they may come in as flesh and blood. We know that all the tribes are going to be in their lands, but they will not be first fruits. They have taken the chance of losing being a first fruit by rejecting him. And who will be? We know that all the true believers today are all first fruits. And I believe most of them are Israelites, and primarily of the tribe of Joseph, of Ephraim. And what does he say? The blessing in Genesis 48 that we read is that Ephraim will be the fullness of the nations. See, by all these people coming in from all over the world, all these believers, they're all being called back, all for Yahweh's plan. Let's go to Romans 9. And Romans 9 is a summary of everything we've been talking about today. It's all summed up in this one chapter here in Romans 9, and I'm going to read it. Romans 9. I tell the truth in the Messiah, I do not lie, my conscience bearing witness with me in the Holy Spirit, that my grief is great and a never-ending pain is in my heart. For I myself was wishing to be accursed from the Messiah on behalf of my brothers, my kinsmen according to flesh, Israelites. Who are Israelites? Whose are the adoption, the birthright, and the glory, and the covenants, and the law-giving, and the service, and the promises? Who are the fathers, and of whom is the Messiah according to flesh? He being Elohim over all, blessed forever. Amen. Not, however, that the word of Yahweh has failed, for not all those of Israel are Israel, nor because they are Abraham's seed are all children, but in Isaac a seed will be called to you. That's what we said in the very beginning. That is, not the children of the flesh are children of Elohim, but the children of the promise are counted for a seed. For the word of promise is this, according to this time I will come, and a son will be to Sarah. And not only so, but also Rebekah, conceiving from one, our father Isaac. For the children not yet being born, not having done any good or evil, that the purpose of Yahweh according to election might stand, not of works, but the one calling, It was said to her, the greater shall serve the lesser, even as has been written, I loved Jacob, I hated Esau. Let's drop down now to verse 23. And he that makes known the riches of his glory on vessels of mercy, which he before prepared for glory, whom he also called, not only us of Jews, but also out of the nations. Let me read that again. And that he made known the riches of his glory on vessels of mercy. What did he say in Hosea? I will have no mercy when they went into captivity, but on those that I didn't have mercy, now you'll be called sons of the living Elohim. That he will have mercy in the end time, because he prepared them for glory, and he called not only us, but also out of the nations. These are not Gentiles. These are the Israelites that have been scattered by the diaspora throughout the world. As also he says in Hosea, I will call those not my people, my people, and those not beloved, beloved. And it shall be in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, there they will be called sons of the living Elohim. Israelites again. But Isaiah cries on behalf of Israel, if the number of the sons of Israel be as the sands of the sea, the remnant will be saved. It's not all of Israel. Remember, it's only the seed of Isaac. And it's only the ones now who are accepting the call. In America, there may be 100 million people in America today that are Israelites. How many are believers? How many took the call? Very, very few. Very, very few. In the thousands. You know, probably not even 100,000 true believers there of the seed of Israel. But Isaiah, if the number of the sons of Israel be as the sand of the sea, the remnant will be saved. For he is bringing the matter to an end and cutting short in righteousness. Because Yahweh will do a thing having been cut short on the earth. And as Isaiah has said before, except the master of hosts left the seed to us, we would have become as Sodom and we would have been as Gomorrah. Where are the 10 tribes? Where are the 10 tribes? Nobody knows for sure. But we have archaeological, historical records that show they're all over the earth. See, unless Yahweh did this, they would have been like Sodom and Gomorrah. And there are historical and archaeological records showing that tribes of Israel, Ephraim, and many of the other tribes, have been found in India, in China, all over Europe, including Britain, the British Isles, Denmark, Norway, Finland, you name it, that whole area there, Ireland, Scotland, America, Armenia, the Balkans, the Middle East, Afghanistan, the Ukraine. Anybody that has a Worldwide Church of God background, you know that when the Iron Curtain fell down in the early 90s, those people came out of the Ukraine that were Israelites, that Sabbath believers, Holy Day believers, that were kept back there, thousands of them. South America, Brazil. And you know what's interesting? That by Yahweh doing this, because of His promise, by His election, you know what it shows? What it shows is that Yahweh can keep His promise to Abraham. But we, you know, of the diaspora, we of the nations, that we can't boast in sinful flesh, but in the faith of Yeshua. See, I can't stand here today and tell you with a clear face that I am definitely from the tribe of Ephraim, or from the tribe of Dan, or from the tribe of Naphtali. I don't know. I feel 99.9% sure that I'm an Israelite. And whether I know 100% I am by my baptism, but I feel my bloodline is. I can't prove it. And you know why Yahweh made it that way? So that I can't boast in flesh. You know what I can prove? I can prove my faith in Yeshua. And that's what's going to get me into His kingdom. Not what tribe I come from. See, so this whole thing of Yahweh working this out with the diaspora and calling the tribes back, it is unbelievable what He is doing. I will show you a work in your day that if I told you, you would not believe it. But it is to His glory and for His promises to Abraham. And we the people of the diaspora, we the children of Israel who are being called back to this, we can't take any boasting because we don't even know what our lineages are. But when Yeshua comes and He gives a new name in that day, I'm sure all of us will know our true lineage at that time. But He did it purposely this way, that we can't boast in sinful flesh, only in the faith of Yeshua. You know, Ephraim, Israel's responsibility now is to finish the work. Remember what it said? Don't say there's 4 months to the harvest. Look, the harvest is white. See, the other ones, the tribe of Judah, the scepter promised, they already sowed the seed 2,000 years ago. It's our turn to reap. It's our turn to finish the work. And you want to know something? What did it say? Judah and Jerusalem is left desolate. And yet every feast day, these feasts that point to Yeshua and Messiah, they are there in His city, the city of the great King. And what are they saying? They are not proclaiming His name and His glory. And you know something? The friction, the envy between Judah and between Ephraim, it's going to end when the Messiah comes, but it's still there today. And we got to go and we have to proclaim the King's glory in His city of the great King. It's important. And again, if anybody doesn't want to go, so be it. It's between you and Yahweh. You keep that feast wherever you have to, because they're holy days, they're holy assemblies, and we have to keep them no matter where we are. But if you can, and if you're compelled to, as a son of Israel and a son of Abraham, you go to Yeshua's city. You go to the city of peace, and you proclaim who the Messiah is in front of your brother Judah. While he's there with his blasphemies, and he's there with all his abominations and his idolatry, you go there as a son of Abraham, and you proclaim who is the King of Israel. You could read about the watchman in Ezekiel. I'm not going to go there because we're just about out of time. But we are the watchmen of Israel. We are the sons of Ephraim. We're the sons of Joseph. The sons of Israel. Maybe we could save some. Who knows? You know, Ephraim and the tribe, the other tribes, they're scattered throughout the whole world. Ephraim and Manasseh, I think I proved today, it's not only American Britain. But like we read, it's the fullness of the nations. It's the fullness of all the nations. There's a much bigger picture, I believe, than many had thought before. A much bigger picture. With greater blessings built on greater promises. Not just material promises that were fulfilled and Solomon's kingship, but we're talking about eternal promises. We are talking about now that we, as the children of Israel, can proclaim the two houses. That there's another side. There's a birthright promise. It's not just the scepter of Judah. And that there are greater promises built on greater promises of faith in Yeshua. And if you think that America's blessings are the only fulfillment of Abraham's promises back in Genesis, I am telling you, just wait. Just wait, because you ain't seen nothing yet. Absolutely nothing yet. Next week, I'm going to go into a part two of this, and I'm going to go into primarily about Joseph, and I'm going to show Joseph in the shadow of the Messiah. There's so much in there about Joseph in the book of Genesis that I think we could tie it into this sermon also and go into specifically some of the blessings. It's very interesting, you know, because the word picture for Joseph, the word Joseph means adding to, and the word picture for Joseph from the Hebrew word picture alphabet, the pictogram, is to support the work of the joining together of the Most High. To support the work of the joining together of the Most High. Is there any doubt what our job is today? Is there absolutely any doubt what our job is today? We have a very important job. Our job is to go out there and to tell the identity of Israel, what they've lost. To bring people back to the one tree. To bring them back to the law of Yahweh. To bring them back to His commandments and His statutes and His judgments, which the land of America never kept. People in America kept them, but the land of America never kept or promoted or taught the commandments and the statutes and the judgments. We need to do this. We have a big job ahead of us. And I don't believe there's a lot of time to do it. Like we read in Romans, did you hear what he said? It's a short work. And he's going to cut that work short in righteousness. And when we hear a sermon like today, it should send chills up our back. That these things are being revealed in our time. And how short the time is to get that work done. But like we just read in John, don't say there's 4 months to the harvest. We have to work today. The harvest is right already. Our brothers and our sisters of the tribes of Israel and Ephraim are out there. And we have to go out and we have to work while it's day. And most of all, of anything, we should just praise Yahweh that He's given us this knowledge and act upon it. So next week we'll go into Joseph and we'll see some more things. So Yahweh bless. Until next week.